Welcome to season 2 of WeTel Talks. WeTel is a community for developers, and WeTel Talks is our live audio stream. This is a recorded episode from the live stream. We invite inspiring techies from all over the world to meet, host talks, and discuss the latest in tech. My name is Charlotte Holman, and I'm the founder of WeTel. In this episode, we meet Anton Aderum, who is the CTO of BokaDirekt.se. He started there 7 years ago as a full-stack developer. 4 years later, he was promoted to CTO. He talks about the journey that he spent going from 3 to 20 developers and the many technical challenges they have solved along the way. All right, so today with us we have Anton Aderum from BokaDirekt.se. You are CTO there. So fun to have you here.
Thank you. Feels great to be here.
So for us that don't know much about you, can you tell us a bit about your background?
Absolutely. I'm 30 years old now. I'm from the west coast of Sweden. So I've been here in Stockholm for 7 years. And I think my technical background is a little unusual in that it's not purely technical. I spent a lot of time on sports and music when I was younger. So I didn't really get into programming and software development until almost the university.
And you work at BokaDirekt, which is translated to book directly, you can say.
Yep.
Can you tell a bit what the company does?
For sure. We are a health and beauty booking system and a marketplace. The largest one in Sweden. I would say even the largest one in Northern Europe. Maybe that's hard to verify. our main goal is to really help our professional merchants to do their job as well as possible, so that they can focus on cutting the hair or you know, working with the eyebrows, and not have to worry about handling bookings, their scheduling, communicating with the customers, you know, sending them an SMS to remind them that their treatment is happening soon. So our main goal is really to be the one system that our merchants need to be able to focus on their own business. Mm-hmm. And then on the other side, we have BokaDirekt.se, which is our marketplace where we let all users or everybody in Sweden search for a treatment that they want or need. And that's a really exciting part of the system, I think.
Mm. And how long have the company been around?
It's just over 10 years now. I think it might even be 12. And it started with a marketplace focus from the beginning. So the focus from BokaDirekt has always been to bring more bookings to the merchants, and to really help them in their daily work. Of course, a lot of have happened in these 10 plus years. But the main goal has always been bookings.
And you've been there for 7 years, which is quite a long time in this industry.
It is a very long time, and I maybe didn't expect that when I started either. And I started, when I came in, there were only two developers there, and I came in just as a normal developer, or a normal full-stack developer. And I remember us celebrating, because when I came in, it was still a very successful company. They had a lot of large customers and many bookings. So I remember us celebrating 300,000 bookings in a month then. Mm. And I remember thinking, wow, that's a lot of bookings. I joined a really successful company here, and just now we've kind of celebrated 1.5 million bookings in a month.
In a month.
So that's a nice growth in these 7 years I've been there.
And like, what is your key to success? Because I have used this service.
Yeah, it's always been. I think it's Amazon who says they're not customer focused, they're customer obsessed, and I think that's been really what we've been trying to do all the time as well. And for a very long time, that customer has been the professional merchant. So it's always been about building a system that works for them, mm-hmm. and really caters to all of their needs. And then on the other hand, with the marketplace, it's been about being the best marketplace we can be for everyday users who need something done. If they need a haircut, they can find it through us. If they need to get their nails done, they can find it through us. If they have a backache, they can find help through us. Mm. So it's always been to see what does the customer need, and we've based everything on that.
Mm. And you must have good SEO, because if I am looking for my hairdresser, I come to your page.
Yeah, that's the power of being a large player, I guess. And of course, we have good SEO, and it's something we've focused on, not only for ourselves, but also for our merchants. Because if we can help you here find your merchant and book them, then it's been a win-win for us. Mm. But of course, we have a lot of websites, the merchants' own websites. They link to us, which also gives better SEO. But something we focus on a lot.
Mm. Cool. And so 7 years ago, when you came in, you started as a normal developer, and were you a full stack developer that you started as?
Yeah, exactly.
What languages?
Bokadek then was only a .NET shop or .NET environment, so it's been a C# and Microsoft SQL back then. And it was actually a web forms application, which is this kind of old .NET framework for building websites. And that has evolved over the years. It's gone into C# MVC system and lately a .NET Core system, or just as it's called now, .NET, I think. They change the names all the time in C#. Also now during the last couple of years, we've incorporated a lot of Node.js in our marketplace and are also working with other technologies as Elasticsearch and Redis and Postgres SQL. Mm.
And what was, we were talking about this earlier, so after 4 years you became CTO, and I know that a lot of our listeners, they probably wonder like, oh, how do I become CTO? What were your steps towards your goal?
I think the first step was being hired at a great workplace and a great business where you had responsibilities, and you also had the option to take responsibility and to really evolve by yourself. In my case, I mean, directly it was about the CTO leaving. He lived in Uppsala and wanted to work in Uppsala, so that kind of opened up a spot. And I guess that what I had shown the years before there convinced my CEO that I was worthy of the CTO role. But I think that looks very different in each company. And of course, if you're in a bigger company, then the requirements for a CTO type role will be much different from a small company. So when I became CTO, I think we were 5 developers. That's still kind of smallish. Then that also means you can still mostly just be a developer as well in your daily work as a CTO.
Mm-hmm. And what motivated you to get the title? Because not everyone wants to be CTO.
Definitely, and I think a lot of the work I had done before becoming a CTO was CTO-ish, and what I mean by that, I guess, is really leading projects that we were doing, taking technical decisions in, you know, architecture and software design, and which languages we are using. So I found all of that very fun to do. I also really liked the kind of project leadership side of it as well. So not just the technical side, but the more human side, I guess, the culture side of it. So I think it was a combination of all those things that motivated me. Mm. Yeah.
Interesting. And were you like up against someone else?
Well, I don't know. They haven't.
Maybe.
Yeah, they haven't said so. No, I think I were up against. If the company wanted to, you know, promote within the company, or if they wanted to find someone external that maybe had the CTO experience. So I think that was probably the biggest question that my CEO had to think about. Mm-hmm. But I think, you know, they trusted me, and that's also one of the reasons I've been here for 7 years, because I've felt that from the very beginning they've trusted me and been giving me more and more responsibility and things to do. Mm-hmm. So I don't think it was a too big question for my boss, if I may say so myself, but mm-hmm. we'll see.
Yeah, because a lot of people think it's good to kind of grow into a leadership role also. I've been in a company before mm-hmm. where we had an awkward situation where it was a person that were growing into that role, and then they took an external, and that created some tension because it was like, hey, I was here for 5 years, and so what do you think about
yeah.
that?
Yeah, no, I definitely, I think every company loves to to promote from within, because you know the person perfectly. I think most companies will try to do that, but then of course you have the other problem is maybe sometimes you take someone who's a really excellent developer and you promote them to CTO or some sort of engineering manager or whatever, and they're not a good fit for that role at all. It would have been better to give them bigger responsibilities as a software developer, maybe. So probably a very case by case situation. Mm-hmm. But I mean, anytime we can give our developers new responsibilities, more responsibilities, we love to do that, because it grows them. They can learn new things, but we also know that this is a good person from the start.
Mm. And what are your day-to-day tasks? Because now you are, was it 20 people? Almost?
Exactly, we're 20 developers now. Mm. So yeah, they have changed a lot. And obviously 7 years ago, all I did was code. Mm. And 3 years ago, mostly what I did was coding as well. Maybe a bit more focused on long-term planning and making sure that our technologies are more up to date. And the situation today, I still do a lot of coding. I would say I do maybe 30% coding. The rest, yeah, I think that's it's enough for me. It helps me keep up to date, and it mm-hmm. also, I really like coding, so mm-hmm. And I think the rest is focused on the more fluffy parts of are our processes working. It's about doing recruitment, maybe talking to the board, so of course it changes. But mostly what I do is still very technical and focused on either me writing code to solve problems, or working together with the developers who will do the coding, and talking about architecture and software design and the requirements gathering part of it. So I really enjoy being in the creative process. So I'm glad I can still do that a lot. Yeah.
Mm. And what do you think are like the most important features of a CTO?
It's a very, very hard question, and I think a very tough question. And I think probably looks very different in different companies. I mean, if you're looking at Scania or whatever, that's a very different CTO probably from me. But at least in my mind, as a CTO, you need to be technically interested.
Or interested how in technical do you have to be?
In my mind, since I am very technical, I think you need to be very technical. I think you kind of need to come from that. I'm sure it works, especially in bigger companies, to have more of a maybe financial or, you know, MBA background. But since ultimately all technical decisions comes to you as a CTO, if you don't know it yourself, then you have to always rely on others, on getting that knowledge, which I think maybe leaves a gap in what should be taken into consideration. So I think you need to be definitely technical, but I also think you can't be only technical.
Can I ask one more thing?
Yeah.
Do you have to know the language in which your team is working?
No, I mean, if you are three developers, I think so. If you are 30, probably not all of them. But I think you need to understand why that language is being used. And why the developer chose that language and why they wanted to use it. You need to understand, okay, will this language be still be used in 5 years? Or is it a modern language that will just disappear? The more you grow, the less you need to know about the exact details. But I think you need the understanding still.
I think I would want to know some details.
Yeah. And I mean,
unless I trust my team completely and I work with them for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, you need to, I think, trust your team completely, but I think for you to be able to take the best decisions, you need to understand the whole system. In my mind, you need to be very very technical and there, but you also need to really like the other parts of it, the business side, the HR side, the process side. I think if you don't find those areas interested, then probably you shouldn't be a CTO. Probably you should just be a software architect or lead developer maybe. But especially as a company grows, that part of a CTO role will also expand.
Cool. And let's talk about your technical challenges. What has been your major technical challenges throughout the years? Maybe they have changed.
They have changed a bit for sure. When I started Bokadect, we were still hosted on a dedicated server, basically in a basement somewhere here in Stockholm. And we had, I think that was almost when I started, so 7 years ago. And AWS were really really starting to get traction then, became more and more normal, but it was still a bit of a cutting edge, I think, to consider AWS. But then we looked at it a lot, but then I know we had a scare with the computer not functioning as we wanted, so we kind of just said, okay, we need to migrate to AWS now to have that extra redundancy. So I think the same night we we spent the whole night trying to move everything, and of course the next morning was a completely new kind of traffic flowing through the system. So that was a very big challenge just that day. but then you have to rethink how you do everything when you're hosting everything on one computer, maybe one big computer. You can get away with cheating a little more, I think, than when you start using the cloud and maybe using smaller servers in a more distributed way. So that was a big challenge. And I think also our main challenge has always been the high amount of traffic we have. So, like I said, we have 1.5 million bookings now. That's at our peaks, we have more than a booking per second going through the system. And if you think what kind of is required for a booking to happen is someone, well, they first need to visit Bokadect, they need to maybe find that service, they also need to find a time for that service and provide their information. So there's a lot of things happening for that booking to actually take place. And the scaling and handling of that high amount of traffic load is quite a challenge. Mm. And something we all are always kind of trying to improve and work on.
Mm. I haven't worked with that so much. I dread when we have that, and I'm like, that's a luxury problem.
It is a luxury problem, yeah.
Then I probably have someone else. But what do you do? You have tons of microservices? So what do you do?
Yeah, we're actually not very microservice focused, but we do have, we always try to scale things horizontally. So even though maybe we have mostly one core API, if we take our marketplace for example, that's not one big server that's running on, that's maybe 20 small servers it's running on. And of course that also means if we get an increase in traffic, then we can scale out a lot of more smaller service, smaller servers. And then it becomes about doing as little as possible, especially at the time of the request. So for example, with the booking, okay, what's important when someone books? Well, it's that the booking is stored in the database so that the merchant knows that it exists and that the user is happy that the booking was made. But you don't have to send the email in the same transaction. You can kind of just schedule that. You don't have to send the SMS. And all of these things, you don't have to re-index the search engine yet. You can wait with that. So it a lot of it becomes cheating or doing as little as possible. I mean, usually the email will be sent 2 seconds afterwards, anyways. Mm-hmm. But if you had a big traffic increase or whatever, then your server or your service who is sending all the emails can just take those emails in the queue without overwhelming itself. And all of these things are things you kind of discover as you go along. Mm-hmm. So like you said, maybe you don't have that problem yet and you won't
get the same problems.
Yeah.
Like,
but you won't get all of the problems at the same time, which I think sometimes you look at, big systems or big companies, you think, how can they have solved all of these problems? Mm-hmm. I think the truth is they've had a lot of problems, but not at the same time. So you've had the time to fix one thing as you go along.
You Google that.
You're laying the railroad in front of the train all the time and kind of running with it.
But that is exactly how it is. And that's what's so much fun. When you start when you're there from the very, very beginning and you're like, okay, I'm just gonna do a React app.
Yeah.
Then you have the next problem. It's like you get thousands of users. Like, shit. Now, our biggest challenge is a super admin, actually. One of our biggest challenges, because we have to see all the data. We have to see, okay, who did what? When did this person book this interview with that person? And I'm not from a back-end place. I'm a front-end from the beginning. And things start to go very slow, very quickly.
You have a lot of fun challenges ahead. But they are fun, and it feels very nice to accomplish things. Mm. It feels very nice to be able to handle.
And you know why you do it in a certain way.
Yeah, and you know all the hard work that went into it from your team. Setting up the database correctly, setting up the scaling correctly, writing the code correctly, doing the pull request reviews correctly. It's a lot of effort and a lot of teamwork to make that happen. That's one of my favorite things about software development. It's something you collaborate on, and then you see this maybe not always instant result, but usually quite quick results, and it's a wonderful feeling.
Mm-hmm. It's like building a house, but you don't know what the house is gonna look like.
Yeah, and it's also like building a house without having to care about physics, which is nice. You don't have to care about rainy days or if the ground is too hard or too soft.
Digital problems. Okay, very cool. And so let's talk. And oh yeah, let's not forget about the search engine. That's
speaking of
be,
technical problems. Yeah,
I mean that must be one of your biggest challenges.
Yeah, but if you look at our marketplace, which is what we call the Bokelek.se, and our two apps we have for iPhone and Android, then the search engine is the main part of that in how you discover new places to book, or even the places you have been before, but you want to find them again. And when you look at it from the outside, it definitely feels very natural, and it's it feels, oh, this, you know, Bokelek, they know salons, they know when they can be booked, so of course I can do the search, and that is how we want it to be. Going back to the customer obsessed part of it is that we know this is what the user wants. But when you look at it from a technical distance, and this might be very technical, but we have a lot of technical people listening now, so that's good. The search engine is an Elasticsearch service.
Mm-hmm.
And for those who don't know Elasticsearch, it's a document-based database, you can say. So you store everything you want to search for, you store as one document in a JSON format, basically. And in our case, then, since what we want users to be able to do is to search for, I want to book a massage in Stockholm on Saturday morning.
Mm-hmm.
So we need all that information in each document. And the way Elasticsearch and most of these search engine works is that each document then is a unique combination of all of those things. So you get salons times services times available. We have roughly 15,000 salons. We have, most of them have about 40 services.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at it, they usually are bookable 8 times a day.
Mm-hmm.
So if you want to have 100 days of that in your search engine, you end up with 500 million documents,
mm-hmm.
which is one of those numbers that, you know, that almost doesn't mean anything because it's so large.
Mm-hmm.
But so then, like you said before, like, how do you keep that quick, and how do you actually manage the that search without it being slow? And it's again going back to cheating, so which I
cheating
like.
Is
yeah,
the answer.
Yeah, cheating is always the answer. So we really thought about it, like, how can we give the users what they want, which is to search for this very specific time in a specific area for a specific service without needing to store all of this information? And how we saw that this, we've divided each day into buckets, three buckets. So we have morning, afternoon, and evening. And then we just store one time in each of these buckets, because the search doesn't really care if you have one or 10 times on Saturday morning. As long as you have one time, we are happy.
Mm-hmm.
So that actually gets us down to just over 10 million documents.
Mm-hmm. So basically, you took all the times and you were like, you're either morning or night.
Exactly, on each date. I don't know. So that's a 50 times reduction, I guess, in how much data you need to store. That was a long journey to kind of find that place and to find that knowledge in how Elasticsearch worked best, and how we should do the queries towards Elasticsearch, and how we can best aggregate the data without losing the granularity we wanted.
Mm-hmm.
But now you can do a search for Massage Stockholm on Saturday and have a response in 150 milliseconds.
Mm-hmm.
And I've looked it up. I think we're almost alone in being able to offer this kind of service, especially in Sweden. I even looked at some of the bigger competitors out in Europe, and they don't really have it. So it's something we are very proud of, and we are working a lot with. And it's a very fun challenge that we keep improving and working on all the time.
And it's so I don't know if this is the right word, theoretic, but very cool.
Hey, it is. It takes a lot of thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
How can you optimize and cheat as much as possible without losing what you really wanted?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very fun challenge.
Mm-hmm. And your competitors, did you say that they don't have the same speed? Is that what you meant? Or
I think even the that kind of search from the beginning is unusual. It's a very hard problem to solve. Or you can do it naively, but then it's just going to be slow.
Mm. That's super cool. Maybe one day I can build something,
yeah.
And then I can call you and ask.
Exactly.
Great. So let's talk about leadership. I was asked, do you have a leadership style, you think?
I probably do. I guess it's better to ask someone else. I always try to think, how can I stay out of the way as much as possible. So the way we've kind of set up our teams now that we are growing is that, you know, we don't have one team of 20 developers. We have five teams of four developers who really own their part of their system and can really operate entirely on their own. And I just always try to ask them, how can I help you? That's the one thing I always think about, like, how can I help my team? It's all about enabling your team to perform as well as possible. And so you can't really say, we have to do this or we have to do that. You should instead ask, what should we do to improve this?
What if they say the wrong thing then?
Well, then you can always have a discussion. Yeah.
Answer, but it's wrong.
Yeah, exactly. But then maybe I am wrong. I definitely don't have all the answers.
And when you hire, I have to say that you said that you hired three people through Vital.
Yeah, we hired two. Yeah, two people. Hopefully three. It's amazing. In two months, and the first one has already started working just last week.
Yeah. So happy about that.
Yeah, we are as well. It's been great. We've talked with a lot of people in Vital, had a very good experience there, and we're definitely going to keep using it.
Oh, we love happy customers.
Yeah.
So when you hire people, what do you look for?
I always say, and I say this in recruitment process as well, the most important thing is to be kind. So I always try to start there. We don't really talk about code until almost the third interview, or at least directly. So for me, I'm always looking for kindness, or, you know, being a good person. And the second part, I think, is forward leaning, that you're interested, you're kind of, don't have to be that, you know, I'm going to run a project. It can just be, oh, I'm very, this person is super interested in C# or databases or whatever. Mm-hmm. So that's always where we kind of base everything on. And then we have a small code test that we try to do, and then we go over that code in a more technical interview. But usually that's just a verification of, okay, this person is who we thought it was.
Yeah. And have you learned something throughout the years? You started with five people in your team. What kind of mistakes have you learned from? Both when hiring, leading people, etc.?
Well, that's a tough question. I'm not sure I'm going to have a specific mistake to say here, but I've learned that you you never know as much as you think you do, and especially in improving the process in whatever you're doing is almost kind of the most important thing. And I think agile is a misused word these days. But in the original meaning maybe of the word agile, it is about iterating your processes all the time. And I think we are doing that, and that's how we learn. So we try to avoid learning in 1 year increments and instead learning in 2 weeks increments in everything from how we write code to how we interview people and how we onboard people when they start working. So I would say I'm learning every day.
Mm-hmm. And how do you give feedback and stuff like that to learn new things?
I think that's very dependent on who it is. Of course, with some people you can be super straightforward and they say, hey, this is a mistake, we shouldn't do it like this. And of course, with others, it needs to be more of a, okay, let's focus on learning this part more. But it's also one of the things in our recruitment process we are looking for is we're looking for people who wants to learn. And if you have someone who wants to learn, then it's super easy. Because then they will kind of drag the information out of you instead of you having to tell them.
And what would you say is a good versus bad leader?
That's an even tougher question. I think it's almost impossible to answer. It's kind of like answering what is a good versus bad employee or a person. It's going to be so dependent on the situation. And, you know, there's, 8 billion people in the world. So, of course, they need different kinds of leaders. But if I have to say one thing, I would say what I said before. It's that I think each of those leaders always needs to ask themselves and the team they're leading in, how can I help you? What can I do to improve the team's ways of working or their tasks or whatever it can be? I think as long as you have that question in mind, the leadership style will solve itself because the team will tell you what kind of leader you need to be.
And last question. It's very hard to keep good talent. As we all know, they have tons of offers.
Mm-hmm.
What do you do to keep them motivated? And also, what do they do to keep you? Because, I mean, you've been there for 7 years.
I have been here for 7 years, and I think what's in my mind, it's of course it's about having fun at work, both in the way that you do stuff that you enjoy doing, and you also have fun at the office, or even if you're not at the office, you have fun in the Slack channel or in the daily stand up or whatever. I think that is obviously super important. And then I think the whole learning path or getting the responsibilities that you want to get is super important as well. Some people want to really grow quickly and take on more and more responsibility and really, really, are pointing upwards. And some people just want to really drill down into difficult SQL queries or whatever it might be. And just allowing people to move in the direction they want, of course, will make them want to stay longer at the company. The biggest compliment that I think that we can get is when our developers recommends one of their friends to us.
Mm-hmm.
and tell them, hey, you should come working here. And that have happened now 3 times in the last year and a half. So that makes me super proud.
Yeah. Oh, I love the stage that you're in. You're like 50 people or 40 or something like that, right?
We're actually 70 because we have quite a large customer service part. So
I looked at LinkedIn.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, maybe not all are. So here in Stockholm, we are 30 people. Yeah. And our customer service part is mostly up in Luleå.
Yeah, it's a fun place to be in when you're not big enough, so you start like forgetting who is.
Yeah, I mean, we always say that we are a mature scale-up company with a kind of startup feeling, because that's how it feels, definitely. Like you said, you know everybody, you know what they do, and you can grab that after work whenever you want to.
Okay, that was it. Thank you so much for coming. It was great to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode. WeTel Talks is created by WeTel, a coding community with thousands of developers. In our app, you can find your next career opportunity or join tech conversations. See you next time.